During November last year, I had the honor of being a co-host of the Network to Heal Summit, which was created by Matthias and Doris Badner in Germany. These two beautiful souls are passionate about sharing the knowledge of homeopathy and many other natural health modalities to people around the globe. Matthias and Doris have given me permission to share some of the interviews from the Network to Heal Summit with our loyal listeners on the Homeopathy Hangout podcast. Be sure to visit www.networktoheal.de and sign up to their newsletter so you can be notified of future summits. Also, be sure to check out www.matthiasbadner.com for his other summits that he hosts throughout the year. That's www.matthiasbadner.com. And both websites are in English and German. Today's guest is Australian homeopathic icon, Dr. Isaac Golden, who also featured on episode 9 and episode 126 of this podcast. As we all know, Isaac is the world authority on homeopathic prophylaxis, also sometimes referred to as homeopathic immunization. So when Matthias and Doris asked me to find some Australian homeopaths to interview for the summit, I knew I absolutely had to have Isaac on the show. Not only did I get to interview him for the Network to Heal Summit, but I finally got to meet him in person at the AHA conference in Brisbane in November. And the cherry on the cake was getting to meet his stunning daughter and fellow homeopath, the vivacious Leia Golden, who has also been on the podcast twice. It really was a dream come true to get to meet these inspirational homeopaths in person. To find out more about Isaac or to purchase any of his books, visit www.homestudy.net. That's homestudy.net. Thanks for listening. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Network to Heal Summit, where today we have the immense opportunity of speaking with Dr. Isaac Golden from Australia. Welcome, Isaac.
Thank you, Eugenie. It's a great pleasure to be with you and all of the people around the world who are watching. Very
exciting. Exactly. It's wonderful. It's so great. And when Matthias asked me to interview some Australian homeopaths for the Network to Heal Summit, needless to say, you were top of mind, Isaac, because you are such a wealth of knowledge and the world authority on homeoprophylaxis, or as some people say, homeopathic immunization. So I just had to get you on because, holy moly, we've just been through a very interesting few years around the globe. And I know the angle that you're going to be speaking from today is the missed opportunity that we had in this pandemic. I completely agree. I know we've had a little chat about this in the past as well, but I'm really excited for you to share this with our audience. And is there anything else that you want to say before we hop into your slideshow? I know you've prepared something for us, but anything you want to say before we start?
Well, the only thing to say is that it's not over, and that's the problem. And so what I would love to think is that whilst most of your audience probably knows what we're going to talk about and the implications of it to a great degree, even if a few people also get to hear this and realize what homeopathy could have done over the last 3 years and what it still can do for the coming years. Because, as I said, I really don't think this is over, unfortunately. I mean, we know the ramifications from the COVID vaccines will last for years. And I'm flat out at the moment dealing with injuries from COVID vaccines, mainly for adults. In the past, it's been more children, but of course, at the moment, it's mainly the adults who have been affected by the vaccine. So, yeah, I hope this is also a little call out that, you know, for goodness sake, if we can convince some politicians, some community leaders to find out about the opportunities that homeopathy can offer the world, it would be a great thing.
Absolutely. And people are still waking up. They're still popping. I had a nurse in the clinic just this week who she was the one that was adamantly telling all her family she's not going to see any of them if they don't get the vaccine. And, you know, something has finally popped for her in the last 6 weeks. She said to me, the last 6 weeks, something finally clicked. And I am completely shocked by what I'm seeing. My eyes have opened and I can never unsee that. And now she's looking at career changes and all these other things. So people are still waking up. And this is why it's so important that we're still sharing this information.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, you've got the floor, Isaac.
Right. Well, we've done the introduction already, Eugenie, in terms of the title,
the timeline.
Homeopathy and COVID, a missed opportunity. And that's really what I wanted to focus on today. And why do I talk about a missed opportunity? So basically, since February 2020, in other words, right at the start of this epidemic, we won't quibble with words, homeopaths around the world have really made a serious and a significant contribution to dealing with SARS-CoV-2. But the trouble was the pandemic was managed by people with vested interests in prolonging it and ensuring the only publicly acceptable treatments were expensive and toxic vaccines and drugs. And most people around the world were not and still are not aware of this wonderful option, which we did have. But this also, you know, applies to integrative medicine practitioners as well, because in Australia, a number of orthodox GPs who practiced integrative medicine were attacked by the authorities. A couple lost their licenses, and more than a few were basically served warnings that if they didn't desist from telling people that there were safe and natural options in the area of integrative medicine, nutritional medicine, herbs, etc., that they could also be punished. It was dreadful. So I just thought I'd put a little list of what homeopathy offers in situations like COVID. So first of all, immunization against the ever-changing variants of SARS-CoV-2. Secondly, treatment during the acute phase of the disease. Three, treatment for the effects of the spike protein in both unvaccinated, who acquire it through shedding by vaccinated people, but also in vaccinated and infected people where the spike protein is a factor. Treatment for long COVID, the old never well since situation that homeopaths are so used to dealing with, and treatments for the effects of the COVID vaccines. So what I'm really discussing today is some evidence and data to support what I've just claimed, because it's easy to say those things, but do we have evidence supporting that? So first of all, immunization against the ever-changing variants of SARS-CoV-2. So right at the beginning, in February 2020, I published an option for homeopathic immunization against SARS-CoV-2 using the Cuban approach, which in Cuba, they tend to, rather than use a single remedy when immunizing against a particular disease or using homeoprophylaxis, they tend to mix a combination of appropriate nosodes or remedies made from diseased material and genus epidemicus remedies, remedies used to treat the disease. And if anyone wants to have a look at my first suggestions there, there's the link for you. And you'll see that it did not include a COVID nosode because we didn't have any. Right at the beginning of the epidemic, we just didn't have COVID nosodes. But homeopathy works on the principle of similars. So fortunately, we didn't need exactly the same. We didn't need a COVID nosode. We could select similar nosodes to use in a remedy like this. Also, right at the beginning, early 2020, in India, the CCRH, the Central Council for Research in Homeopathy, which works under the Ministry of Ayush in India, they did a thorough analysis of the early presenting symptoms of people who got COVID in India, and they recommended using the GE or genus epidemicus remedy, Arsenicum album. And actually, the Prime Minister of India, Mr. Modi, he was using Arsenicum album at the beginning, along with many other Indians, but only a small fraction of the total population, which, of course, is huge. Other homeopaths around the world either agreed with Arsenicum album and used that, or decided that a different genus epidemicus remedy was more appropriate for their region or their country. And this is the thing where the principle of similars means that there can be more than one remedy. And so if symptoms present somewhat differently in India than they do in, say, Australia, where we are, then a different GE remedy could be used. So those who were running the international response to COVID, they told the world through a very, very compliant mainstream media and political class that basically the world had to wait for vaccines, for prevention. But that was a lie. And it was one of many, many lies that we as an international community have been told over the last 3 years, and they're still being maintained by many people. So in terms of what can homeopathy offer for immunization or disease prevention, now recently, back in 2019, I had published in two different peer-reviewed journals a couple of articles talking about the use of homeopathic immunization in literally hundreds of millions of doses. And I just looked at the use in three countries where the government had supported the use, and government organizations were using homeoprophylaxis. So Brazil, Cuba, and India. And there's a summary of those two articles. I've given a homeopathy360.com produced a summary, and people can go and get that, just download it themselves. And this showed that the average effectiveness of homeoprophylaxis was around 88%. And that's certainly as good as one gets with vaccines. But the interesting thing for me was that the limited evidence supporting the effectiveness of homeoprophylaxis against SARS-CoV-2, it appeared to be less than that. And I've come up with a figure somewhat closer to 70% rather than nearly 90%. And by the way, 70% is significantly better than the vaccines from Pfizer, Moderna, AstraZeneca, et cetera, et cetera. So, and of course, there's no risk of any toxic damage. So even though the early evidence appeared to show there was a bit of a difference in effectiveness, the effectiveness was still significantly better than the real effectiveness of the COVID vaccines. And a very dear colleague and friend of mine, Dr. Gustavo Bracho from Cuba, who now actually lives in Adelaide in Australia with his wonderful family.
Really?
Oh, yes. Yeah, oh. He came over in 2015 or 2016. Actually, he and his family are now Australian citizens.
Oh, that's amazing. I didn't know that. That's so
okay,
cool.
Okay, well, Dr. Bracho is coming to the Australian Homeopathic Association.
The conference?
Biannual conference.
Oh, I'll see you both there.
Yeah, in November, and Wonderful. He's one of the league speakers. But he and I, you know, I've been to Cuba four times, and he hosted me all the times. Dr. Bracho was the person who led the homeoprophylaxis interventions in Cuba from 2007 to 2015. So he's not a homeopath. He actually is an expert in vaccine adjuvants. At the Finlay Institute, his boss, Dr. Kampa, directed him as vice president. He was vice president of the institute to actually lead the responses to the great wave of leptospirosis that swept through the eastern provinces of Cuba in 2007 and then again in 2008. And that's how he and I came to know each other. I was invited to Cuba to speak at their big conference there in 2008. And they were sort of using some of my protocols, unbeknown to me. So we've kept in touch ever since then, and of course since he's come to Australia. And we've worked on an article which we've sent off to Homeopathic Links, hasn't been accepted as yet. And one of the big things Dr. Bracho said is that the difference between the effectiveness of homeoprophylaxis against, if you like, more conventional infectious diseases and against COVID is mainly coming down to the inability of our homeopathic laboratories to get access to high quality nozodes. So you see, in Cuba, one of the reasons they were so successful is that, say, with leptospirosis, they would isolate the strain that was affecting the community. They would confirm it. They would then purify it and then make their nozode. Whereas most of the nozodes we're using at the moment, with a few exceptions around the world, are basically made from sputum of people who we expect have had COVID or do have COVID. Mm. But that's relying on the tests, the conventional tests, which are not 100% effective
anyway.
We don't know. You know, some of the times a person might have a bad flu, they think it's COVID. They donate their sputum, for want of a better word. The laboratory makes a remedy. It may not actually be a very effective nozode at all compared to the way that the Cubans went about it. And you see, every laboratory or every country has laboratories that can do that. But of course, they don't do it because politicians in virtually every country in the world are convinced that homeopathy has nothing to offer. And therefore, why would they direct some of their scientists to go through the isolation, verification, purification, and then preparation of substances for homeopathic use? They won't. And that's a real, real shame. I mean, Dr. Braccio and I worked with a colleague for some years, actually, in 2021 and part of 2022, on trying to make this happen somewhere, and we weren't successful, unfortunately, but we haven't completely given up. But the government in this country could get that done tomorrow, and in Germany, where Matthias is, and around the world, they could do this if there was a will to do it. And I'm sure if they saw the evidence available, they would do it, because that would bring the figure from 70% up closer to 90%. Which is what we were promised with the COVID vaccines at the beginning. But of course, they didn't deliver that promise. It was a lie as well.
Yeah. And now you're more likely to get COVID if you have had the vaccine, and the evidence has come out of that.
There's evidence coming out about that. So we have the potential to make what we've used already even more effective.
Mm.
And all it needs is some open-minded politicians in every country to say, yeah, look, we've seen the evidence on both sides, the evidence about how really effective vaccines are, and the evidence about potentially how effective the COVID immunizations are using homeopathy. And, you know, the material that I've published recently talks about that as well. We'll come to that a little later as well. So, you know, they could be saying, apart from saving hundreds of millions or billions of dollars on these very, very expensive and potentially very risky vaccines, which are not particularly effective, we could spend a million or two immunizing the country against COVID in a small country like Australia, or even if it's 100 million in big countries. You know, it's so much less expensive. There is no downside post-immunization like there is with vaccines. And you know, we have a better level of effectiveness. And this is what started my talk, A Missed Opportunity. At this point of time, this is the opportunity we've missed. God willing, it may be picked up. But let's keep going.
Mm.
So, secondly, treatment. So that was to do with prevention. Treatment during the acute phase of the disease. Now, homeopaths around the world, right from the beginning, we're using remedies selected according to the principle of similars to treat SARS-CoV-2 with a range of remedies. It depended on the symptoms each particular individual patient was presenting with. So it wasn't as though there was only one remedy to treat. Not at all. There was probably about a dozen. I mean, Arsenicum album, which the Indians found most likely to be useful, was very commonly used, but even normal common remedies like Pulsatilla, Bryonia, Phosphorus, you know, they were coming up quite strongly in the treatment of COVID. So you didn't need strange exotic remedies to actually treat the disease. You just needed to do your job as a practitioner. And on the integrative medicine side, the medical doctors there they developed more and more successful protocols using their medicines. And you know, there were a group of doctors in America in particular who did really, really good work, and they used things like iodine and, you know, vitamin C, zinc. We all know in terms of prevention that if elderly people in nursing homes have been allowed and encouraged to take vitamin D, which is incredibly inexpensive and safe, many of them who died wouldn't have died. Many of them who had to go to hospital wouldn't have needed to go to hospital. Things as simple and as direct as that. But, you know, most people remained unaware of the options. Now, treatment for the effects of the spike protein in unvaccinated, vaccinated, and infected people. Let's talk a little bit about this. So the vaccines focused on techniques to cause the vaccinated people to produce large quantities of the COVID spike protein. And the theory was this will result in antibodies against the spike protein. If the spike protein is prevented from doing its job, then even if the person's exposed to SARS-CoV-2, the organism can't enter the cells of their body. So, you know, this would prevent a vaccinated person from being infected if exposed. Well, we know it didn't work particularly well. And, you know, right from the beginning, the risks of this method were largely unknown and untested, except, and I'm no expert in this area, but I certainly read a number of very convincing presentations and articles written about earlier experiments with mRNA technology to produce animal vaccines. And some of them were very seriously unsuccessful. In other words, a lot of the animals died. Now, given that background using this new mRNA technology, you would have thought that the medical authorities who are meant to be protecting us, protecting the peoples of the world, would have been extra careful before approving these new mRNA vaccines. But we know now that they weren't. And, you know, we all heard about the court case in America with Pfizer, who tried to prevent the data associated with their vaccine trials from being put out into the public arena for hundreds of years. And thank God, an honorable justice in an American court said, no, you're going to have to bring a lot of that forward. And we've seen so much information come out from those Pfizer studies, and it showed, you know, that these things were dangerous. But despite that, the American CDC, Institute of Health, etc., they approved these COVID vaccines. And of course, in Australia, like little trained puppies, our authorities just followed along, and the same throughout the world. So in other words, the people who are in charge of the health systems throughout the world, instead of protecting us, they didn't do their job. They didn't properly investigate the true effectiveness and the true safety of these new experimental technology jabs, and people suffered as a result, and still are, and probably will be suffering for a long time. So shedding, because of this, these so-called vaccines causing the people who are vaccinated to produce massive amounts of spike protein, this spike protein was shed through the skin, through the mucous membranes, and it became a serious problem for many people who were just exposed, just touching or being breathed upon by vaccinated people, because it could be transferred through touch or through aerosol spread. But also, of course, it became a problem for vaccinated people. And if a person had COVID, then of course the spike protein is in their system as well. So that became a problem as well. But once again, homeopathy had practical answers. Now, I recently published a letter in that wonderful journal, hpathy.com, who was where I published that February 2020 article. And the recent one's called The Scorpion Versus the Spike Protein. And the reason I called it that is because one of the best remedies to actually treat the effects of the spike protein is potency of scorpion. Now, people who are not familiar with homeopathy might be shaking their heads and saying, did I hear that right? Scorpion? But when you think about it, you know, what's a scorpion? It's got a flat body and then a big tail. What's at the end of the tail? A big spike. So I used to love, when I first started studying natural medicine, the doctrine of signatures in herbal medicine. Well, the spike protein, the spike at the end of the tail of the scorpion, is a little bit like the
doctrine of signatures. Yeah, I love that too. Yeah. It's all in nature there for us to discover. It's all in front of us.
Absolutely. Mm. Yeah. So the remedy I used, I call it BUAU. It's the potency of the Australian scorpion called Boothus australis. So BU, Boothus, AU, australis, to treat the effects of the spike protein. And I'll be showing you a table in a moment showing the results of two surveys that I conducted with patients using the remedy BUAU, and the results are overwhelmingly positive. But of course, no one who was directed by the pharmaceutical drug cartels would allow anyone to know about this simple, safe, and inexpensive option. And so the link to that article I mentioned is down the bottom there. So the really interesting thing for me, Eugenie, was that when I actually started using BUAU, it was to treat the effects of shedding. In other words, mainly for people who were unvaccinated, who were suddenly became unwell in a whole range of ways. And the only clue was they'd been mixing with people who were recently vaccinated. And so you had to guess, yeah, it's possibly the spike protein being shed by the vaccinated people and causing symptoms in the unvaccinated. And so that was number one, treating symptoms from shedding was the principal use that I thought BUAU would have value in. And so you can see the two surveys there, 2021 and 2022. The 2021 survey had almost 2,000 responses from people using the remedy, and 2022 was a much smaller response, about 350, I think. But, and the question was asked, if you've been using BUAU to treat the effects of shedding, how did you find its effectiveness? How well did it work? Low, medium, or high? And you can see there that it had a very, very strong result. High in 21 was almost 60%, and 22 was just over 60%, around the 30%. So, you know, we were looking at over 90% medium or high effectiveness for treating the effects of shedding. It was a very, very strong result both years. But then I'd also asked in the questionnaires whether they'd used BUAU, even though I hadn't said to do it, whether they'd used BUAU to treat symptoms from infection with SARS-CoV-2, or if they'd used BUAU following a COVID vaccine where they were unwell. So looking first of all at number two, treating symptoms from infection with SARS-CoV-2, once again, low, wasn't nearly as effective as the treating symptoms from shedding, but you're still looking at, in 2021, 42% in both years, actually, but in the medium range, you're looking at almost 37% in 21 and almost 50% in 2022. So, you know, once again, when you look at those figures combined, they are very, very powerful figures for something that I didn't realize people would be using the remedy for, particularly. And then once again, treating symptoms following COVID vaccines. I'd happened to ask the question. I'm really glad I did, because once again, I was giving out different remedies, and we'll talk about this later, to treat the effects of the COVID vaccines. But people may not have had those remedies, so they thought, well, spike protein, let's try the BUAU. And once again, you see very strong results there. So the BUAU, as I said, the scorpion versus the spike protein. Well, the scorpion is winning most of the time. So all I can say to your listeners is that you don't have to use the Australian version. I've got colleagues, you know, around the world who have used their own scorpion, and they seem to be getting very good results. And I must give acknowledgement to my colleague Jeremy Scher, who I first heard about the use of the scorpion. He was in Israel and was using the Israeli scorpion. Well, of course, when I decided to give Jeremy's suggestion a try here, I didn't have an Israeli scorpion, but I had an Australian one. So we used that, and you can see the results. They're very, very powerful. So if you live in a different country and you don't have an Australian or an Israeli scorpion, then use what you've got in your country.
I just want to add in there, Isaac, yeah. Aren't our clients or our patients our biggest teachers? Because so often my clients have used remedies for things that I wouldn't have thought of, and you just learn so much from that.
Absolutely.
But I also want to add in there that I was very, very lucky to have had you and your beautiful daughter Leia on my podcast quite early on in the show, and very lucky that you mentioned Boothus then, because I have personally had hundreds of clients who have used Boothus over the past couple of years, thanks to you both, with really incredible results. And I would have to say it was probably about a 60% success rate with Boothus in my clinic as well. I have to tell you just one quick little story of a client who she used the Boothus, and then she lives in the country. Every 2 weeks, she has to go into the city to go do her grocery shopping. And every 2 weeks, as soon as she gets into the shopping center, she would get a period, which has never been an issue in the past. So I also made like a little combination remedy made of the vaccines themselves, plus DNA and RNA. And I put the white pine needle and a low potency in there, and we called it CST, COVID shot transmission. So, you know, she tried the Boothus first. That's the first one we give. And for her, there wasn't any luck. But I have to say, really, I have hundreds of cases where Boothus was amazing for clients. So we tried my remedy, my combination remedy, which also helped so many clients, but it didn't work for her. And then we ended up getting the remedy graphene oxide, and also the remedy made from spike protein, which I don't know. I'm guessing it was made on a radionics machine. I don't know how the remedy was made, but that one really helped for her so much. And isn't it amazing that we have all these incredible options that we can use?
Yeah. Yeah, I've certainly used potencies of the spike protein with a few patients. And it's only been a few, because most of them haven't needed something a little bit out of left field. But
yeah.
Jeannie, what I'd be saying to you is, and all the other practitioners out there who have a similar experience to you, please document it. Put your data together.
Yeah.
Just imagine if you've got 100 people like you, like me, putting all this data together, then instead of, you know, a few thousand responses, we could have 100,000 responses, and that makes the data that much more powerful. So, you know, I always plead to homeopaths, keep data about stuff like this. It's not hard to do, and it makes a massive difference if we started to work together to build up a huge database. Now, that's the reason I did those earlier articles I mentioned talking about the use of homeopathic immunization in over 250 million people. Those, not people, about 60 million people, but in that subset, but over 250 million doses. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. That's not all the use of homeoprophylaxis. That was just three countries over a period of about 40 years. So, you know, the data we've got potentially is huge, but people need to collect it.
Well, anyway, I might get in touch with you afterwards for a bit of a survey, and then do a retrospective survey with my clients.
Oh, well, you know, there's nothing wrong with retrospective surveys. The more the merrier, though.
Wonderful. Let's
keep going. So then the next thing to talk about is the treatment for long COVID. And there are many people who are reporting, you know, I've never been the same since having COVID. And homeopaths for 200 years have been dealing with never well since. In other words, never well since a particular event. It's actually, in case taking for homeopathy, it's a key point. And it doesn't have to be an infectious disease. It can be a car accident. It can be a bereavement, which affects the person. It can be suddenly sacked from your job. So it can be mental, emotional, physical, never well since. But in terms of never well since particular infectious diseases, we've been dealing with things like, for example, glandular fevers, probably one of the most common ones. You know, how often do you get a patient who had glandular fever 10 or maybe 20, 30 years ago sometimes, and they've never been the same? and you give them high potencies of the glandular fever nozode, and it can many times unlock those cases very simply, very easily. And the same can apply with COVID. And so once again, I'm going to show a little bit of data in a moment, but I've been using potencies of mixed variants or mixed nozodes of COVID from the different variants and getting pretty good results. You'll see the results in a moment. And it's a very simple start to a treatment like that. Now, I'm not saying for one moment the homeopath shouldn't take a proper case and look at the symptom-specific remedies. But in a situation like never well since a particular infectious disease, then it makes a lot of sense to start with the nozode. And the reason for that is that the effect of an infectious disease can create a block to the person's own self-healing mechanism working. We know it's not working, otherwise the person would have recovered. So it was blocked by the infectious disease. And the quickest and simplest way of removing a block is potencies of the actual cause. Now, when you remove that to the extent you can, if there are still residual symptoms, that's where the classical approach comes into its own. And also using, if you can, constitutional remedies, of course, always are going to build up the person. But even if you're just using symptom-specific remedies to treat, they'll be very, very valuable. But of course, you know, the orthodox people, the people running the health systems in most countries, don't want to hear about this. It's too inexpensive. It's too safe. It's too simple. They've got to have expensive, toxic options, which are now being promoted through GP clinics all over the place, which can help some people, not help others, but don't get to the cause.
I love hearing you say that, because that's exactly what I've been doing in clinic. Clients who have been never well since COVID or have kept on getting up. I had somebody the other day, she had 5 rounds of COVID. And, you know, you give them, I usually give a 10 mL of the nozode and, you know, for 3 days. And often that's all they need. You know, yeah. Sometimes in really persistent cases, you might need to repeat it. But it's been so satisfying. And I almost feel like I'm cheating because it's been so easy to treat these people with these nozodes. But I, you've just reminded me, I need to get some more of the different nozodes and maybe just mix them up, because I have been using one and getting good results with that. But I think I might have to get some of the other nozodes. I know we're up to 5, 6, 7 different ones now, I believe.
Oh, probably.
I believe there's still new ones being made. So yeah, it's hard to keep up with it all sometimes.
Okay. So then finally, in that list of 5 things I promised I'd try and show what evidence we had for making those statements, the effect of COVID vaccines themselves. Now, I've been working with vaccine-injured children since 1986, and in fact, I've literally just only a couple of weeks ago finished the new 4th edition of my book, Vaccine-Injured Children, and it's available on any of the different Amazon sites around the world, as well as, of course, on my own website. But over the last 3 years, I've seen a massive change, because previously, vaccine injury, most of the time, I was only seeing children that their parents brought in. Well, now I'm seeing the parents who got the vaccine. And once again, the appropriate use of vaccine potencies is really, really helpful, has helped a lot of people. So let me show you, because I know where time is getting a little bit closer, some data that I've collected from my own clinical work. Now, I classify in my vaccine-injured children data results based on whether it's a strong improvement, an improvement, no improvement, whether the patient's worse, whether it's unclear, in other words, there are ups and downs, and whether there's a reaction but not following up. Now, you'll see T6 is missing in that table. T6 is just no follow-up. I have quite a high level of no follow-ups for a number of reasons. One, in Australia, I do most of the treatment at a distance, and Australia has very few people with a very large landmass. So most people who want help can't necessarily come and see me. But unfortunately, that also means that the follow-up is much less than it would be just for when you're sitting down talking to people. But there are other reasons as well. Sometimes it goes into T6 because the case is too recent. So there hasn't been time to have a proper use of the remedies and a follow-up. Sometimes the person's got better. Sometimes the person's got worse, but the parents have thought, no, we're going to move on, or we don't need to do anything else. So the data is a lot more meaningful if you remove the no follow-ups, because people often think, well, you know, that means it's been, hasn't been a good result, but that's not the case at all. So when we look at this, we can see there are three columns. So first of all, treatment for COVID vaccine injury. Of the people who followed up, 50% said there was a strong improvement, 18% said there was an improvement. So that's 68% almost, just over two-thirds. For some people, there was just no reaction at all. For others, there was no improvement. But once, again, you can just look at those data, the data, and then basically see that just with the simple use of the vaccine potencies, there is a significant level of improvement there. The second column talks about the treatment with long COVID, and that's using the potencies of the nosodes. So the COVID vaccine injury was using potencies of the Pfizer vaccine, Moderna, AstraZeneca, etc., whereas the long COVID is using potencies of the nosode. And you can see 55% strong improvement, 34% an improvement. So that's almost 90% improvement of some sort. And there was another 10% where that wasn't the case. So that's a very, very strong result for using something with long COVID, as simple as what you just mentioned, you know, the different potencies. Now, the third column I've left in here, even though it's outside of what we've been talking about, because it is very, very important for me, and it has to be looked at totally differently to the other two.
Mm.
Now, this column relates to something which, until the last 3 years, I'd virtually never been asked to do. So it's to do with vaccine-injured children, and up until the last 3 years, virtually all the children I'd seen were children with significant health issues that were affecting their quality of life. The spectrum was probably the biggest one on a single item, but ADHD, Asperger's, but physical things too, like, you know, chronic asthma, chronic allergies, chronic skin eruptions. It could just be a whole range of behavioral issues as well in general. So over the last 3 years since COVID started, the profile of children who are presented to me has changed. And it's changed because more and more parents, and at least 50% of children that I've been asked to do this with, it's at least 50% now, the parents are saying, look, my child's pretty healthy, but I'm worried about the vaccines now. You know, I've learned so much over COVID. I just want you to do a simple detox for the DPT hexa, for the MMR vaccine, whatever. And these are the figures that have come up for those children. And what you can see here, 41.5% said no reaction. Well, that's what you kind of expected, because these children are meant to be basically healthy. But there were reactions in 34.1%, plus, if you go to the top of that column, 17.1 strong improvement and 7.3 improvement. So in other words, 34% of the parents who responded said that their child, who they thought was not affected by the vaccines, actually was, because that's the only way the potencies of the vaccines could cause a reaction, if the vaccine was still causing problems in the system. Otherwise, it would just do nothing. But then you've got 24%, which showed either a strong improvement or an improvement in symptoms, which previously the parents hadn't thought were that significant. And what it's showing, let's make it very simple, about half the children who have been vaccinated that the parents think are okay are not okay, even slightly more than half. So that was a really, really interesting finding for me, because once again, that was a finding I had not expected. And it's only by collecting data that we can see these things, you know, find these things. Now, we're getting close to the end. So just finishing off a couple of things. This is the new book that I've just released, the fourth edition, Vaccine Injured Children, 21st Century Tragedy, Treatment, Prevention and Reasons. And it's all the data in it has been updated. One of the things it allows us to do is to look at symptom profiles of the different vaccines, the MMR vaccine compared to the MMRV, which is the varicella additive, compared to just the varicella on its own. But also I've looked at, say, with the DPT, which originally was just three, diphtheria, tetanus, whooping cough, is now six in Infanrix Hexa, how that, as they've added different antigens over the time, how the symptom profile of that vaccine has changed. So all of that, there are more vaccines in there, and there's a lot of case histories regarding the treatment of vaccine-injured children. So I hope practitioners and parents, because it's a book for both, will find that useful. So just to summarize, a missed opportunity indeed, you know, and how different the world would be if COVID, SARS-CoV-2 had not been weaponized to create fear and compliance in most people and generate billions of dollars in profit for the pharmaceutical drug cartels and their minions. And, you know, how different if the peoples of the world, including our politicians, had been given the opportunity to use homeopathy as well as integrative medicines to both prevent and treat SARS-CoV-2. And in the words of that lovely old folk song, when will we ever learn? I really do hope we do learn. And remember that what we were and are able to offer to deal with all aspects of COVID is already available for other infectious diseases, prevention, acute treatment, treatment of never well since infectious conditions, and treatment of vaccine injury. And this will also be the case when the next pandemic is manufactured by the people who very happily sacrificing health creation for all, for wealth creation for themselves, and by politicians who are either too afraid to act or too stupid to know they're being manipulated or are complicit. So if people want to contact me, you've got my details there for books, information, et cetera, about courses that I run as well, or if there's an email needed there. And there's some of the books, homeopathic books I've published. So thank you, Eugenie. I hope that's been useful to the folks out there.
Absolutely, Isaac. You always delight. You never disappoint.
Very good.
Thank you so much for sharing this information. And something that was like, I was buzzing because so many of the statistics that you mentioned, it really echoes exactly what I see in my clinic. So it was a really nice little pat on the back. Like none of what you said was like really different to what I see. Like I'm like, yeah, I see exactly that. I see these parents who have woken up since COVID who are coming in and saying, so I think my child's really healthy, but let's do these detoxes. And I would also say, you know, large percentage of them are like, well, actually my child's not having their ear infections anymore. Actually their behavior is better. Actually this, actually that. Yeah. And that was really interesting. And then with the nosodes as well, yep, they are doing such a great job of never well since, just removing that layer. And it's just such a no-brainer. The vaccine injuries have been so satisfying to treat. It's just like when it's a no-brainer for me. If somebody comes into the clinic with a vaccine injury, especially with the COVID vaccine, I mean, all of them, but just more recently, these people who were so, you know, they come into our clinic, they are just in this horrible place where they realize they've had the wool pulled over their eyes. Yeah. They are terrified of what's happened, of the future, of what their health's going to look like because their friends are dropping dead around them, are getting aggressive cancers out of nowhere, and they don't want to head their direction. So they come and see us feeling deflated and scared. And then we give them these detoxes and they come back and they experience such a profound improvement in their health. I remember one of the ladies I saw had bruises over her thighs from the week that she got the vaccine 2 years earlier until the day she saw me. And within 2 weeks of the detox, those bruises were gone. So you can't, I mean, that's not placebo. Yeah.
No, that's right.
Every homeopath around the world has dozens of stories exactly like this. We've seen lots of asthma cases since the vaccine, but then also so many of our clients who have not had the vaccine are experiencing symptoms as if they had. So a lot of these similar things that they're friends are having, they are having, and then that we have tools to help them there as well. So there's not a single subsection of the population that we are not able to help. And to be in a career where you can say that is just so wonderful. It's the time for homeopaths is now. And the difference that we're making is incredible. It's such a buzz.
Yes, we could make a lot more if politicians weren't so stupid or complicit.
Yeah. And, you know, Isaac, just as a side note, this is where I really just want to take my hat off to you, because you are not just talking the talk, you are walking the walk. And for any of the audience out there, part of the summit, who does not know, Isaac was one of the founders of the Health Australia Party, and he recently ran as well. And, you know, there's so much of your own time and money and effort that goes into making a change. I mean, you're not just talking about this, you actually ran your party, you actually ran for your district to get in there and make the change. And you need
We weren't elected, Eugenie. That's the problem.
But still, though, you did it, you know? Like, that's, you will never be able to say what if, you know, because you've done that all. You've done it. So you can sleep easy at night knowing that you have done more than most people do in several lifetimes.
It's not about me. It's about what homeopathy has to offer the world.
But sure, it's an inspiration as well for everyone else.
That's a missed opportunity. I just hope some people will try and make sure that it's less missed than it has been, and that it's more known. And please, you know, if these things can be made known to politicians, eventually there might be enough of them with enough courage to come out and say, listen, we can do better and we need to do better.
Definitely. And you have certainly inspired me today to start writing some statistics down. I'm not a statistics person. I'm like a big picture thinky person. But you know what? You have just inspired me that I need to go sit down and collate these numbers, you know, send out some surveys, just go and really get this down onto paper. And more of us need to do that, because we do need this data. And it will, you know, it's really interesting. Like you said, you weren't expecting that. And, you know, even with your PhD study that you did with the four different subsets of children, those with the vaccinated, and so I mean, that was, you mentioned that was quite an interesting finding for you, that the children who had homeopathic immunization even had better health than the ones who were just treated constitutionally. And so when we do have this data, we can analyze that and learn from that.
That's the reason for collecting figures. And as I said before, if enough practitioners do it, then we end up with a massive database. And the more numbers that we can get, the lower the error, potential error in the figures. So, you know, that's the one thing with homeoprophylaxis that even a lot of homeopaths don't realize. With the best data set in homeopathy is homeoprophylaxis. It's got by far the biggest data set available because of its nature. It doesn't mean that more people haven't been treated over 200 years by practitioners, but it means the data is so much easier to collect when you're immunizing a whole country, as they did in Cuba a couple of times, or you're immunizing a whole state like Andhra Pradesh, which has more people than Australia does just in one state in India. And, you know, when the authorities say, right, we're going to use homeopathic immunization against Japanese encephalitis over in Andhra Pradesh, and they were immunizing around 20 million children a year, and that's the reason I first went to India, I'd seen this data, and I said, it's too good to be true. And so I went over there and met some of the people who'd been involved in the big immunization programs, and then I was very blessed to met the leaders of the CCRH and the Minister of AYUSH. You know, they have done amazing things there involving, you know, tens of millions of people every year. So we have a massive database of evidence. And even though each individual study may not be a perfect study, when you put them all together, the mass of data is too great to resist. even the most skeptical person has to put aside a little bit of that skepticism when they see data like this, even though they may not publicly admit it. So, you know, this is why practitioners collecting a bit of information like this, just simple stuff, makes a big difference. And I know in Australia, the wonderful ladies at the Aurum Project, and if there's any men there, them as well, but I know it's mainly ladies, and they've been trying very, very hard for a decade or more now to collect, you know, data about different aspects of homeopathy in Australia. But, you know, it just needs people to do it, to do something, and that contributes.
This is a bit more of a specifics question, because I know people, like some of the homeopaths, are going to be listening to this and asking about the vaccine detoxing. Are you using like Ton Janssen's method, or do you? I know.
No.
Because in your previous books that I've read, you kind of use the potency that you feel matched the case, right?
So, you know, Ton basically was more to do with detoxing. And, oh, what's his name? I've forgotten his name.
Tinnis Smith.
Yeah. Sorry. Thank you. Yeah. He was the one who really had who began cease therapy. And we use very similar approaches. And Tinnis had a standard protocol, which was appropriate to promote because it was trying to tell a lot of people how to do something very safely and relatively quickly. And I have no doubt in his own clinic, he would have varied the protocol if the person reacted and the reaction suggested a variance was needed. So when people say, do I use cease therapy? The answer is no in the strict sense. But what Tinnis and I did was very, very similar. In fact, before his death, we'd been in contact for quite a few years over the internet. We came across each other by accident in a way. We shared the data that we were collecting, and our data, even though it was two people on different sides of the planet working on something very similar, but without any coordination between them, our data was almost exactly the same. And that makes it even more powerful. The fact that two people can independently come to virtually the identical results. This is in terms of treating vaccine injury. Now, Ton's brought in other things as well, and, you know, more power to his arm. But it's more, I'm probably a bit more like Tinnis.
Okay.
It's closer to cease therapy, but no, it's a bit more flexible than the, if you like, routine or orthodox cease therapy. I was invited a decade or so ago by the lovely people who, you know, practice cease therapy in Europe to give a talk to one of their conferences. And they were very open-minded about what I was saying, even though I was saying, I don't do exactly what you do, this is what I do. And it wasn't that much different, but it just gave a little bit more flexibility in the system.
That's great, because I was wondering, I've got that Vaccine Damaged Children book of yours, which I'm glad to see you change the title to Vaccine Injured, because that's the terminology that I hope more people will use. Yeah. But when I read that book of yours, which I think was published, is it 2010-ish, somewhere along there?
That's probably the first edition. It's changed dramatically since
then. Well, one of the editions, it's in my clinic. I'm at home today, so I can't go check which edition I've got. But when I was reading your case studies and how you treated the cases, I was like, oh, okay, so you definitely do take it by a case-by-case basis. So because that was a while ago, I'd wondered whether your way that you prescribed that had changed over the years, but you've found that works and you've stuck with that.
Well, I've made mistakes too, and some of the cases shown in the book, certainly the current edition, show some mistakes where I started too high. See, what Tinnis did, he started two doses of 30, two doses of 200, two doses of M, two doses of 10M over a month, and that was the standard approach. I used to start with the potency I thought was most appropriate, so it could have been 30 or it could have been 10M. But a couple of times I started with the 10M, the person was much more sensitive than I'd thought. And so instead of starting with 10M in a case that looks okay, I might now start with a 200 or an M. But I wouldn't necessarily go back to 30 if I thought the person was, you know, robust and was able to manage. With the treatment of the vaccine injuries, and also to a large extent with long COVID, because all my patients now are at a distance all over the country, I usually start with two potencies, 250 m. And with the strict instructions that if they respond, not just react badly, but if they respond positively even to the 200, they must not use the 50 m. And the reason for doing that is to try and speed things up. So if there's no response to the 200, we know they're not hypersensitive. Therefore, it's safe to skip a few potency steps. It just speeds things up a bit. But if they react to the 200, then definitely you must not use the 50 m. You've got to use the 210 m, then 50 m. And if a person looks a bit weak or looks sensitive, I'd always start with a 30 and a 10 m sending them. And if they react to the 30, they mustn't use the 10 m. I have to post them the 200 and the m. So it's more a case of, for most people whose basic client base is, you know, around the area that they live, you can just start with one potency because it's easy for the patient to pop in and pick up the next one. But if they, you know, live on the other side of the country or in a remote area, just getting one at a time, it slows down the treatment process. And that's what another thing I learned in COVID, maybe for another time, that at one point there, sort of mid to late 2021, I was just overwhelmed and had to develop protocols rather than, you know, strict individualization. I mean, there was individualized if I saw a warning flag that someone may be hypersensitive. But otherwise, I had protocols for these different aspects because I just didn't have time to do anything else. And it reminded me of the hospitals I saw in India when I used to visit there. And you'd walk into the hospital waiting room and there might have been 600 or 700 people sitting there. And there might have been, you know, 20 little rooms around the outside edge with liver, kidneys, heart. Each room dealt with one particular aspect. And they had to do it like that because they had to see 100 people a day. Mm. You know, it's we have to be there to help as many people as possible, as well as we can.
Absolutely. And we have to be flexible and we have to change with the times and change things. Like sometimes you just have to adapt. You have to be flexible. And that's how we improve and grow and change. And so good on you for embracing protocols, or at least, you know, like incorporating that, because you were forced into that direction. And we do get pushed. I think sometimes the universe pushes and shoves us into little directions. And, and that's important as well. Isaac, is there any final message that you want to leave the Network to Heal audience with?
Look, really, it's a case of, I don't think we're out of the woods. There are some very unpleasant people and organizations in the planet who are no doubt planning their next step, but we have the power to resist it. And the power will be greater if we stick together, if we communicate with each other, if we support each other. And hopefully, you know, these sort of presentations will help that process enormously. It's by keeping in touch with people and expanding knowledge, people's knowledge and understanding, and expanding the truth across the planet, that we can beat the dark forces, because that's what we're up against, dark forces. But it's doable, and all well and God willing, we'll do it. Thank you, Eugenia.
Thank you so much, Isaac.